And we're back with a new series. This one is a topic that doesn't get a lot of attention in the product world, but it's still critically important. In this series, we're gonna focus on product brand and how it can be a business driver. It's been a topic we've touched on a little bit on the show with a few episodes, but this is the first time that we're actually going to have it as a distinct focus, because I think it's something that doesn't get discussed a lot in the product world. So I'm sure all of you know what brand is, but we are sort of isolating product brand. And it may sound like splitting hairs, but it's actually kind of an important nuance because it's often misunderstood. But don't worry, it's not just going to be me explaining it to you. I have an expert here with me today, the one and only Andy Kennedy. Hey, Andy.
Hey, Christian. Thanks for having me on.
So this warning everybody going into this one, if you're wondering how do these two guys have such amazing chemistry, it's because we work together, and we've worked together for, gosh, 4 years now, I think.
4 years.
Whew. Yeah. So for those of you who may forget this, in addition to co-hosting this podcast with Anna Eaglin, who's not here today because she's busy doing, you know, very important product management work right now, Innovate Map is my day job. And at Innovate Map, when we started the agency back in 2014, we had a product focus, and that was primarily on product management, UX design, which is my background, really in product marketing with positioning and messaging and strategy. What we didn't actually start the agency with was brand. And that's kind of like why it's important to cover now, because I think the industry itself really wasn't thinking about product brand like that. So we went out and found ourselves Andy Kennedy. And today, Andy is a principal at Innovate Map, overseeing our brand and works a lot with words and copy and visual design, and leads our brand design team, does a lot, works a lot leading brand for a lot of startups, you know, some scale-ups all the way from seed stage, you know, all the way through acquisition. So I'm really excited to have Andy here today. So for this, we're going to have a little bit of a conversation. I'll still be asking the questions, but we're going to have some good conversations around what product brand is. So while you aren't going to hear Anna Eaglin this time, you might hear Ellie, who is our Better Product Community Manager, which, of course, if you are subscribing and you are in the community, you know the name really well, but you may hear her voice on here as well. She's going to help out with some questions today. Andy, before we get started, I always like to build up credentials. I think I have kicked it off really well, but before we get to you sharing all of your words of wisdom, can you give our audience a quick background on yourself and why you should be trusted about brand?
Ooh, okay. Background for me professionally. So I've been in the agency world for my entire career, which is now 10 years. I was at a digital interactive agency in Austin, Texas, right out of school. Started my own agency, was there for 3 years as kind of a brand strategist and creative director, helping companies of all types and organizations and people communicate who they are. Did some city branding at the time, did a little bit of tech that was a precursor to my time at Innovate Map. Yeah, and so did a couple projects with Innovate Map when I was doing freelance work, and really just loved the model since then. Man, I don't even know what the number is, but it's a lot of fun. It's, let's just say, a couple dozen brands, all the way from pre-name, pre-revenue, pre-product startups that you have a founder coming in the door with big vision, and you get to take them from soup to nuts and name the company, do the brand identity, to, you know, scaling companies who have had product market fit, who are really trying to go to the next level. Maybe they're introducing a major new feature, or they're going after a new market. Or, yeah, they're expanding geos, and the brand just needs to grow up because it no longer reflects who the company is. All the way then to bigger corporations where their core offering is not digital. They're considering introducing additional digital offerings as sort of complements to their core business. And they need to figure out how that fits alongside of their core business from a brand hierarchy perspective and a brand value perspective. And in all of those, I play a creative director role, coming alongside, weaving together the goals of the business, and really at the intersection of art and commerce, so that we can figure out how these companies can tell their story and use design so that people get it and get what they do and want to use their products.
That's great. That's a wonderful overview. So now everybody knows to listen up to this conversation on brand with Andy Kennedy. So let's get into it. All right. Well, let's start with the existential question. The question that we talked about before recording about what the answer to this question was going to be is, what is product brand?
So actually, the intro was fantastic, Christian. I had a chance to think about this. So every business needs to embrace brand as a sort of a business differentiator. And there's different ways that brand applies to different business categories. And I like to think about product brand as the unique ways that a product-led company needs to embrace the principles of brand design. So brand at the really highest level is you're shaping people's opinions about your business. And product companies have really distinct touch points and places and challenges in helping their specific audiences think specific things about them because they're digital native. They don't have a storefront. They're less and less, specifically as you think B2C or B2U, less and less customer service touch points. So a lot of times they're self-service. And so those are just a few of the unique challenges that product-led businesses face as it relates to shaping the way that that their audiences think about them. And so product brand is, it's using the principles of brand identity design and brand thinking for product-led companies.
Do you think that there's a distinction between, you talk about product for the digital world, do you think that there's a difference in the way brand works or should work in that world versus what we traditionally think of brand? If we think about, like, if anybody's watched the series Mad Men or anything like that, when we think of brand or we think like old school brands or like ad agencies, when we contrast those worlds, do you think that there are any differences between doing it for digital products versus those worlds?
So I think the principles are very similar. I think the touch points, the interactions, the moments to shape your audience's opinions changed. Like, so you mentioned Mad Men, 50s and 60s, you're shaping a lot of opinions via mass media, and consumers were not yet turned off by that. They actually were willing to have their opinions about businesses shaped through, or about businesses to be shaped through advertising, through mass marketing. Now, you know, I grew up in the 90s, and so I was a big Wheaties fan, big Gatorade fan, big MJ fan. I was drinking all the brand Kool-Aid in the 90s, trust me. But we've grown a little bit jaded by advertising. And so now, like, we're forming our opinions about businesses so differently. And specifically with product-led businesses, yeah, the actual interaction with the brand inside of the digital product itself is a huge brand experience right there, right? You think about, I'll just name a physical product that I think has a fantastic brand, and that's Tesla, right? A company that's done zero advertising. So why are their stock prices through the roof? They're valued at more than the big three automakers and their market cap. What is that, right? It's so their physical product itself is phenomenal. Like it and they have a bunch of fanboys, and they're fantastic at PR, but their physical product, like, is, it inspires people. It's different. Like there's over the air updates. It has the minimalist design. And so in the same ways that Tesla's physical product design shapes the way people perceive and think and desire to want to be associated with Tesla, digital products can adopt some of those same principles.
Yeah. So I guess my first reaction to that too is thinking about how things change with brand in the physical world, you know, bricks and mortar and things moving to, like, even direct to consumer. So even taking like a Warby Parker or a Casper mattress and those going, you know, digital first, even though they're physical products, and changing their sort of imprint of the brand. So to your point, like, you know, Warby Parker glasses have, you know, they've got a distinctly good design, and Casper mattresses as well, but a lot of their brand is manifested through the digital experience online.
Yeah, I have an example of that. I mean, I have a Casper mattress.
So how is a Casper mattress? I actually don't know, but if I were to guess, I imagine it's good, but that's only because their brand impression on me.
It's phenomenal. It's so good.
Note to the viewers, I can see Andy and he looks well-rested. So he's not lying.
This is true. Even though I have a six-month-old at home, the Casper mattress still got me zonked out. Another, like, direct-to-consumer brand, Caraway, which is kind of pots and pans. And pots and pans, they're like one of those purchases, at least for our family, that we just put off and put off and put off. And we're still rocking our old wedding, like, pots and pans that we got, you know, 7 years ago. And that was a direct-to-consumer purchase for us. So I've actually held physically in my hands at at Macy's, at IKEA, at, you know, TJ Maxx and all these other places. I've held them in like almost purchased, but then put them down. And then I see a Caraway ad on Instagram, go to the site, gorgeous website, photography is phenomenal. The reviews are amazing. And right there is a moment where, yeah, that's product brand manifested digitally, where a growing subset of buyers are more comfortable doing their research and transacting online. And so I didn't know what Caraway's product felt like in my hand. I had no idea. So the only opportunity that that business had to make an impact and to plant an idea in my head as to what it might be like to hold it was through brand. The name of the business, the look and feel of the business, the type of photography, the tone of voice in the copy, the homes in which they did their photo shoots in. Those were all just subconsciously like injecting ideas into my head as like, is this finally the time I'm going to drop $500 on? And it was.
That's an interesting, so I'm going to try to make a loop here to tie a few things you said together with things that we've talked about on the podcast when it comes to product-led growth. Because you just described testing a pot in person, putting it down. Then you go get very excited by a pot without seeing it. And you basically just described, I think, in my mind, as someone who's learned brand, honestly, a lot from working with you, that it's about the expectation you set. So in Caraway's example, they've set this really strong expectation for you and they've excited you to buy the pot versus the traditional model where we become so accustomed. I'm going to go feel it and see. And when I think about it, you know, I'm a software guy. Like, I think that's what I'm usually trying to get people to say, like, you don't have to do a demo or get someone to like use your product to sell it. You can do that in other ways. So I want to call that out right here for people listening to say, like, this is like the example where how you can use brand to set such a high expectation. Now, I'm going to circle back to Tesla because your point there is Tesla still has really well-designed products and you really like Caraway, you really like Casper. Like, it all falls apart if you don't deliver. So it's not an excuse to say like it all matters on the upfront expectation. In fact, it actually sets it really high, right? So you'd have to deliver on it.
Yeah, you nailed it right there. Like, they set the expectation so high on the site. And then the unpacking experience when I actually received it. And then like, it was just, everything was just beautiful. And I was like, then when I went to go use it, like I had really high expectations and high standards for it. It's the exact same thing in the digital world where you can't do one and not the other, right? Like in some instances, say you have an amazing, say Caraway's product is absolutely phenomenal. Like, or say your digital product solves every problem that your users need to solve and it does it flawlessly. And its uptime is incredible across like up and down the board, right? But if you can't sell it, but if you might never get that opportunity to get that product in their hands if you can't set that expectation and make them feel something and get them excited about it. So yeah, I absolutely agree. It's up and down the board. Tesla is a good example where they have like sort of front of the house, like the buyer side to get me excited about the Tesla brand. And the product's great. Apple is another fantastic company that does the same.
So we've just mentioned some seminal examples with massive stock prices. And we're talking about the physical world. Now, if I'm an average listener, I'm imagining like, all right, cool. So I'm not Apple. I don't have their budget. And I don't make pots and pans. So let's translate this to the digital world. So all of these sort of things that you've been covering with brand, the expectations, the delivery on the product design, Let's help close this loop for listeners when they're thinking about brand for digital products. So how do you take what you're describing there and apply it in the digital product sphere where there is not going to be something that you touch and feel or a store that you walk into?
Yeah. So I think that what you need to do is think about the entire buyer, the entire customer experience from before their customer, like pre-customer experience. You might not like this, Christian, but I'm going to go back to physical real quick. So in that journey, There were a lot of steps in that journey, right? The ad, browsing the website, clicking checkout, the email I received, the tracking number, did it arrive on time, the unboxing experience, the messaging inside there, the instructions, the little paper that came with it. Okay, so in a similar way as the physical world where there's a buyer journey, it's the same digitally, right? I'm going to go to the website, transact. What's the onboarding experience look like? Is there like big dissonance between what maybe it's a beautiful website that just speaks all the correct value props, it's beautiful photography, and set these really high expectations and promises. And then it's like, okay, I'm ready. And I click and the onboarding experience is whack. Or the product itself looks nothing like what I just saw on the site. And so no longer is just acceptable. Does it work? I mean, consumers, we just have such a high standard now because we're getting conditioned by the companies you just mentioned who have these billion-dollar budgets. And so really throughout that entire buyer journey, it has to align.
I think you bring up, it really is in a lot of ways the same thing. If I reflect too, you work on brands in the B2C space, also not just B2B, but you also work on brands that are in like highly technical fields. You've worked on brands in, biomedical, you've worked on healthcare oriented brands. And what I've learned working with you is that you treat all of those the same way. Now, I think when a lot of people are listening to this that come from a more sales led background where a lot of software grows up, I think what I've reflected on is how often people have used salespeople or people to have conversations as a way to manage those expectations. So you just said like you use the product and it doesn't live up. Well, in the past, you have a really great salesperson that like holds your hand and like builds that trust. When you're talking product led, it's almost like imagine that person's not there. Now all of the emphasis is like on the product itself to communicate that.
Well, if I could just jump in, Andy, because I think you're kind of getting at something that I think is really important, that some people have the misconception that a brand is just your logo or it's just your website or it's just your colors. But I think in the same way that you were talking about the physical brand experience, even including things like the unboxing or the delivery time or what even the packaging looks like before you open it, things like that. I think, could you maybe speak to what makes up a product brand in the digital space that's beyond the logo and color palette?
So I'll get into like a little, hopefully not too much philosophy here. Is we're meaning making people. We make meaning out of things. And so we're just like there's too much information. And so we have to judge. We're trying to fit businesses in boxes to understand them, to make sense of them. Can this product solve my problem or not? And a logo plays a role in that. And a color plays a role in that. But they're not, they cannot possibly be separated. As you step into the shoes of your prospective buyer or a user, they're not like parsing out. It's like, oh, okay, there's the logo. It's nice. Okay. What color do they use? Okay. Blue family. Cool. Yeah. I'm digging that. And what typeface is that? That's just unrealistic. Right. And so it is the holistic experience. They need to like, you're trying to plant ideas in people's minds about or expectations in their mind about what it's like to use your product before you get a chance to get it in front of them. And that's why a logo and a color, it's just not enough. Like all of it needs to seamlessly come together. I would add with that, like tone of voice is another thing, right? There's certain categories where you got to be really buttoned up. There's other, consumer categories where you push boundaries and demonstrate that you understand the user and demonstrate you get their world. And so, yeah, it's a really, all of those things need to come together to plant ideas in people's heads so that you're going to get that chance for them to use that beautiful product that you spent so much time on.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the tone of voice and all of that, because that was kind of big for my learning, because I was one of those people in the camp that thought it's just about the visual design. And I remember when we worked on probably one of the first projects that I worked on with you, where I got a lesson in that was on Canvas, which there's a billion companies named Canvas. The one we worked with was text-based interviewing for recruiters. And Canvas, had the name coming in. And the first thing that you kind of helped oversee was the mark and like how it was used. But then when we got to the website or some of the sales tools that were enabling to go to market, you shifted the brand focus, not just from the visual logo and how that was being used into all the way that it was being communicated to people. And you had a distinct, way of speaking with that. Can you talk a little bit about how you make decisions on brand voice? Like, what goes into that? How do you figure out what a voice is for a product brand?
Perfect tee up. I wanted to talk about that. Yeah. So the founder there, Amin, he knew that his solution was way out in front and he knew it was going to be uncomfortable for some recruiters and he was okay with it. And so I remember vividly him saying, like, this is going to turn some people off and we're after the true believers here. And so that right there is license to say, okay, who are the true believers? How do we reach them? What do they want to hear? What are their challenges? what might they get excited about? So in this instance with Canvas, they're recruiters. They're sitting on phone calls all day. 90 seconds into a call that's 30 minutes long, they might know that's not the right person, but they have to do the rest of the 30-minute call. So they're burnt out. They're tired of sitting on phone calls all day that they know that maybe the person's not the right fit. And so one of the lines that I loved that came out of that work is, recruiters are ready to fly. Canvas gives them superpowers. And so that right there, like Christian, your question is, how do you know what tone of voice to take? It's all about who's the person that you're trying to reach. You're going to offend some people in some instances, and that's good. Another analogy is like hot tea, cold tea, don't make warm tea. Nobody wants warm tea. You don't want hot or cold. So this is where that analogy applies, is we went hot. We're going to offend some recruiters who think that text-based recruiting is crazy, and that's fine. We're going to inspire the right people, the true believers, though. And that manifested itself not just in the copy, which had some nice edge to it, but the look and feel as well. They really wove in with one another, a really poppy look and feel, tone of voice, complemented with a product that delivered. John Moore just crushed it on the product design as well. So, you know, that's one cool thing as well, is like when the product design is dope, you feel like you can do some cool things with brand as well. Because it's like, I'm going to set really, really high expectations here for the product, knowing that it's going to deliver. And I have to think that Caraway and Tesla and Apple and Casper and others think the same way in the physical space.
Yeah, I think you covered a lot, and we could even riff on how product design and brand really interact, but maybe we'll save that for another show. In fact, we've got some episodes that cover that a little bit. One thing though that I think that you do well, that you may not be comfortable saying that you do well, but thankfully I work with you so I can call you out for it, is because you talked about brand being a decision that you make based on the users you're trying to attract. And you also kind of hinted that be comfortable with who you are and who you're not. And the cold tea, warm tea, hot tea, I think is a great analogy. For those who never heard it, I'm only just now hearing it for the last few weeks, which is, you know, there are people who want hot tea and there are people who want cold tea. You could average those and just give everybody warm tea. And then like, nobody's really happy. But the thing that you also did, especially knowing that client in Amin Brar you mentioned, you also do a good job listening to the founder or the person who's going to actually sell or represent the product itself in the early startup days. And I think that's true even with larger companies as well. It just might not necessarily be the CEO. It could be, you know, a CMO. It could be a VP of product. But there's an element to what you do too. And I'm calling this out for our audience because I want people to hear this part too, that I look at it too, that you have to have a brand that you feel comfortable in. You know, it has to be something that represents the people that are going to be representing it. When I look at the work you do too, when I'm hearing the brainstorming, you often bring up the founder's personality or their way of speaking or too. So it's almost like the coupling or the translation layer between what the person, you know, is behind the brand and the people that are on the other side of it too.
That's particularly true with, you know, dynamic personalities in smaller companies. Absolutely. I sometimes use the analogy, I like analogies, when we do brand work, I'm very aware that it's personal stuff. Like it's meant to be personal. It's like, it's meant to make people feel things about businesses. That's a weird thought. And so it's like, it's a lot like a new outfit, right? And so when I deliver work, I'm hyper aware that we're giving them a new outfit that's probably different than what they've been wearing in the past. And it's a little uncomfortable. Like, maybe these jeans are too tight and these socks are funny. I don't like the colors in these socks. And, you know, I don't button my shirt all the way up to the top. What are you doing? And so, yeah, you have to, you know, that's just a part of the process. And that's one of the things that when we go through these processes, I encourage the clients that we're presenting to just sure acknowledge your initial reaction, but sit on it as well, because it takes time to settle in. And there is a point where it's not about, it is about them. They need to like sort of believe in it, but it's primarily about reaching their audience. And the cool thing about it is when it reaches their audience, that they're going to love it as well. Like, right, the founder will love it as well, because they're sort of immersed in reaching their audience as well and helping their audience and solving that problem. So they're not as separate sometimes as you might think. You know, Amy Brown at Authentix comes to mind, where she's such a mission-driven founder. And so a brand designed to speak to those who she wants to impact inevitably speaks to her.
I've always joked too, as a UX designer, when I've had to present UX designs, I never really get a lot of happy reactions. It's just more like picking apart the design and being like, oh, I don't like that button there. I always look at the brand designers. You are the only ones who will get someone to like cry from just like joy. Anyway, I'm not bitter about it, but I'm just pointing this out for our audience, just FYI. On the other hand, and this is a segue to the final thing I want to cover, the one thing that I think UX design or product design gets away with is making it more clear how it affects the business itself. It's really easy to tie UX design to usability, to run tests, to make sure that it's succeeding, things like that. What I think is a lot more challenging on the brand side is really defending the business value. I feel like a lot of the value of brand is really hidden. I mean, it's there. Like, you can look at it. You mentioned Tesla and Apple, and you can almost be like, well, there you go. There's the impact of brand. But to actually do that is to get there. The steps are a little bit murkier. So you've always done a pretty good job of sort of tying it to business in some way. So when you think about the business impact of brand, how do you make that connection for yourself?
Yeah, that's the big one. So I like to ask a question to the question. And that's like, do you care about your audience's opinion about your business? And if the answer to that, it's hard to say no to. The answer to that is yes. And I would say brand identity design is the proven way to shape opinions. Like, that's what its job is it's not a full stop, right? Like, brand identity design cannot all in one solve your PR problems, perception problems, but setting a correct foundation, using design to plant ideas in your audience's head so that they see you in a certain way. It is a proven way that, like, using the power of that design, it's really like, it's an easy way, in my opinion. It's a really easy way. I mean, I'm looking at like Target right now. They just came out with a really great new line of market pantry products. Good and Gather is one of them. And it's their seltzer water. And it's like gorgeous, you know? And so I'm sitting there thinking, like, I guarantee that those numbers are just through the roof. Guarantee it. I mean, Ellie, you're shaking your head right now. And so what did they have to do to get that to happen? It's the same damn seltzer water. They made it look beautiful and aspirational, and people wanted to have it in their carts and in their home and in their bellies. And so it's like they hired and like the return on that investment is crazy. So that's a physical product example again. But the answer to your question is, I like to go back. Do you care about the opinions that people have about your audience? Hard to say no to that. Brand is a wonderful tool and a wonderful starting place to create a foundation upon to shape people's opinions.
I think that's great. I think it's a great way to end this too, because you stayed away from saying like, oh, it's all about metrics and all that, which I know you can do, you can add that. But I think what the way you framed it is great, because I think a lot of companies just need to start there to even understand that value. And a lot of these things kind of fall into place. Well, Andy, thank you so much for joining us. This was fascinating. I hope this was useful for everybody too, to sort of like, if this is your first time experiencing brand, Andy's a great guy to learn from. So thanks for giving your time to us, Andy.
Yeah, I was a little nervous coming on. I've never done a podcast before, but this was really fun. I get it. I see why this is really fun. And Christian, you're really good at this too. You make it easy.
Next episode, we're going to hear from John Howell, a brand experience designer who at the time of the interview was at Lyft, but is now at Robinhood, which, to be candid, are two of my favorite brands out there. So this is a great conversation with him where he talks about brand experience, which is a little bit different than just thinking about product brand itself, even though Andy also touched on that too. You're also going to hear from co-founders of Valve Media, a startup news app built to take the bias out of news. As usual, I am your faithful host, well, one half of your co-host, Christian Beck. Anna will be with me on the next episode. But thanks for listening to this episode of Better Product. And again, I pitched it at the beginning. If you haven't already, please join the community to get in touch and get access to more resources at betterproduct.community.